This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Louisiana in East Baton Rouge Parish. We're in the outback right now, near the village of Zachary. We've just bounced along on a gravel road through the pitch black night to visit with Lloyd Johnson, Jr., known fondly throughout the South as Teddy, the 74-year-old owner of Teddy's Juke Joint for the past four decades. Juke joints are typically simply decorated front rooms of an old sharecropper's shack where friends congregate to sing the blues, dance the night away, and down a pint or two. These havens for sharecroppers at one time dotted the rural countryside throughout the Deep South, but there are just a handful still operating today. A new Baton Rouge acquaintance, April Sexy Red Jackson, says,
to understand what a juke joint is and to walk in a facility or a place that's raggedy, the lights, mostly Christmas lights, usually they're either white or red, hanging all types of ways, stuff all over the place. It looks like it hadn't had a good dusting in years. That's a juke joint to me. People laughing and talking, and as soon as you open the door, everybody turns around. Hey! And then you say, hey? You know? That's a juke joint. A lot of blues. They're off the dirt roads, especially Teddy's Juke Joint. You go out there in Zachary at night, and you can't see anything, but he has this little tiny light that's flashing. But the juke joint is all the way off the road, way in the back. So they're off the rural road. They're not in the inner city, which gives you that good feel of that country down-home connection in a juke joint.
Lloyd Johnson says one reason for the demise of the juke joint is that young people balk at paying a cover charge just to cover the cost of the band. Today he's happy if he makes enough from beer sales to pay the utilities.
What brought you up this way?
You.
Oh, okay. My last name is Johnson. My real name is Lloyd Johnson, Jr., and I'm the owner and creator of Teddy's Juke Joint.
So where'd the name Teddy come in?
Well, it was given to me when I was born.
Because you look like a teddy bear?
I have no idea. I didn't know I was called Teddy, and I didn't know Teddy wasn't my real name until I went to first grade in 1953.
So how did you decide to open a juke joint?
Well, different people was telling me I need to open my own juke joint. I started out spinning records. And it just evolved. And one time I got tired of spinning records. I said, well, I just go and open my own place. I went to do all that traveling. They call it being a DJ today.
On the radio.
Yeah. But I quit radio in 1965. Because I made more money spinning records, but I traveled 100,000 miles a year.
Oh, wow.
I've been doing it for 53 years now. I don't travel as much now as I used to.
Whereabouts are we in Louisiana right now?
Well, you're in East Baton Rouge Parish.
Okay.
And here at this building is part of the old Spanish Trail. See, this place used to be the Mississippi River at one time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So it moved from...
Well, they built the levee, and that took the water, moved the water. Yeah.
So who typically comes to Teddy's Juke Joint?
Well, let's put it like this. Every Saturday night, Jesus stopped by and get him a glass of wine. But people come to my place from 50 countries.
Really?
And all over the United States.
But I bet you also have a lot of local neighborhood people out in the country.
Well, yeah, but they don't frequent the place as much as my tourists do.
So you become a legend.
Well, that's what everybody tells me. It's like week before last, had some people from Sweden, Mexico last week, Denmark earlier this year, and Canadians for the last 15, 20 years, day and year, every month.
Is it live music every night or
no,
on special nights?
No, it's not. It's just on special nights now. I used to do 4 days a week, but now I only do 2 nights a week. And the way things look like, I'm going to have to cut them out.
Why?
Because people don't want to pay cover charge. And the average band now wants $200 a man. And that's not no name artist. your name artist, they starts off at $25,000 and go up.
So when you were growing up, when did you first become aware of juke joints? And did you like hanging out and going to juke joints?
Well, I was born in the juke joint era. And my aunt had a little place that she called the Cedar Tree. And she didn't sell nothing but beer and fish sandwiches and chicken and stuff like that. And she ran that until, you know, she got too old to run it. And, but I've been around juke joints all my life. Yeah, simply because of the atmosphere and the way that the government cut juke joints out.
How did the government cut juke joints out?
Because they started back in slavery. And during the time, the slaves wanted to get a dollar for a bale of hay, 100 pounds of hay, whatever it was, and they wanted a day off. So what happened is the different plantation owners, they wanted to stop them from singing in the fields. And so it put them off when they gave them the day off, where they could have little places like this, and that's how the juke joint began. But the slave owners found out they couldn't get no work done because didn't nobody understand what each other was saying. You know, the Supreme Court ruled that the blues is the only music created in America. See, the Kennedy Center was built to honor the blues man. And now I am one of the last 5 juke joints in America.
Wow.
And especially on Highway 61. From Minnesota to the Gulf of Mexico.
Which is the blues highway, right?
Right. Started in Minnesota, ended up at the Gulf of Mexico.
So you have people that drive down from the north.
Oh, yeah, people drive down, they have them fly in. They bring busloads of people, stuff like that, you know. 8 years ago, a bunch of people came in from France. And it was a tour group of 85 people. And they rented 25 convertible Mustangs and drove them from New Orleans to Teddy's Juke Joint, then on up in Mississippi, following the blues trail.
Very cool. So they all rolled in at once to see you.
Right.
Back when you were growing up, some locals were telling me that back in the day that juke joints, the owner and the family typically lived behind or adjacent to the juke joint. Is that your, was
well,
that like
yes.
The piece with your aunt?
Yeah, most of them lived in them. Like, I was born in this one.
Really?
Yeah. See, I was born in this one in 1946. And it's the owner's address I ever had in my whole life. And it's going to be the owner's address I'm going to have until the day I die.
So, when you get groups to play here, where do they typically come from? Like, where are these guys from?
The fellas that's playing tonight, they are from the Baton Rouge area. One of the fellas in there, his name is Sam Hogan. He's 65 years old, and he's been playing since he was 8 years old.
Wow.
And I get a few locals, but I get a lot of people, a lot of bands out of Mississippi and New Orleans, First California, Washington, you know, all over, but basically Mississippi, Alabama.
Do they have like a circuit? Do they play different juke joints? Or?
Well, they used to have the chilling circuit that you don't have anymore, and it was started in Louisiana. B.B. King played the chilling circuit, and things like that.
Did the chilling circuit go all the way up to Arkansas?
Well, the chilling circuit, it started in Louisiana and it went on up through Arkansas, Mississippi, all the way up to Chicago.
Because I was in a small nowhere town in Arkansas, and there was a sign where there was a juke joint where B.B. King used to play, one that burned down.
B.B. King ate crumbs off my grandmother's table.
Wow.
I've been knowing B.B. King ever since I've been big enough to know anybody.
Tell me about that, what you remember about him.
Well, I remember he would come by, my grandmother, whatever she had left over, she would feed him. And he would, you know, he would sleep on the front porch or out in her barn or whatever, or in his car, and went on where he had to go. So 2017, for B.B. King's Day, my topic was the chilling circuit and they made Highway 82 the B.B. King's Highway. That's in Indiola, Mississippi. You know, I've known B.B. King, like I said, my whole life, just about as long as I knew, big enough to remember people.
Did he ever play at your family's juke joint?
No, he would play a little bit on my grandmother's front porch. Uh-huh.
And you were right there to listen?
Right. And things like that. And a lot of times, see, they did a lot of yard parties, or you might call it, you used to call them suppers back in the day. And they would just play because the people would let them stay all night. Because they had to have somewhere to stay. Because they couldn't stay in hotels and motels. You see a lot of stuff about me on YouTube. I'm in Living Blues magazine. I'm in Jefferson magazine. Jefferson magazine is the oldest blues magazine in the world. And it's out of Sweden. And British Airways, you'll find a picture of me on that. I'm the first juke joint in America to be in Southern Living magazine.
Things that are most precious and close to your heart.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the most interesting thing about me making a juke joint out of this place is that my grandmother told me a long time ago when she was still living, and she stepped off a piece of land for my mom to build her house. And so my mom did. She said, son, when you get a wife or get to be a man, I'm gonna step off you a piece of property too. And I said, okay, grandma. But you know, I wasn't understanding what she was saying. And she also told me, she said, as long as you live, or as long as any of my grandchildren or my children live, great grandchildren, they always have a place to stay. So here I'm here still at Teddy's Juke Joint, 41 years. Born in the building in 1946. And the good Lord done blessed me in 2019 to be 73 years old and still in the same spot that I was born in. I walk by the spot every day, three or four times a day, where my baby bed used to be in the, where I was born. To know that you was born in a home and you're going to have a home long as you want one. So 41 years ago, I opened up this place.
Do you have any kids or any descendants, grandkids?
Yes, I have six boys. One is dead. And I don't wish this place on neither one of them. Because it's not what people think it is. It's a juke joint, but as far as a man or a woman making a living, it's just not there.
So do you think the era of juke joints is over?
Well, I don't think...
Do you think it's a dying...
Well, it is a dying industry in America.
Right.
But other countries is keeping it alive. And it all goes back to our ancestors, which were slaves. And when you think about somebody from Sweden, somebody from the Congos, and then you go back, the Native American Indian, which was an Eskimo in the beginning of America. And you got your Mexicans, which they call them Spanish now. But the Spanish people was here before it was America. And, you know, I think it's real serious about our president wants to put up a wall when all over the world, America been helping people to tear down walls. And I don't see why they even entertain that fact or even talk about it, because it don't make no sense to me. Since our new president we got, he haven't did the Blues Man Award show that's at the Kennedy Center. Don't nobody know who they gonna do it, and then nobody ask nobody. So you wonder why all the people from other countries, 50 countries I know for a fact, comes to America just to research the blues. The blues man have traveled more areas than all the presidents in America. And like you might have heard me say a little earlier, the blues is the international language of the world. Everybody understands the blues. But look like America don't want to understand it.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah, you know. And you think about the little backbone places like the juke joint, your mom and pop's cafes, little grocery stores, you know, an old man on the corner working on your car, putting horseshoes on your horses. America done got so advanced until it forgets, as far as I'm concerned, what's the real root of the country. Go back to Mr. B.B. King, blues man. Okay, he played for Parliament. He played all over the world. Wrote songs about the world. Queens and kings, you name it. He even gave a poke, a guitar. And I don't know no musician but the blues man that played the House of Parliament. From President Bush up to Donald Trump. Got a gentleman lives right down the street from me, his name, Mr. Henry Gray. Played for every president from the first Bush up to Obama. And so far, our president have invited the blues man.
Interesting.
So everybody say, well, where's the juke joints going? Isn't that up? Like I said, I don't wish this place on one of my kids, but I'm going to leave it to a member of the family that wants it. Just like my grandmother gave it, left it for me, the land, I'm going to leave this place to them, whether it's a girl, a boy, whatever.
There's a style of blues called swamp blues.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. What does that mean?
The Chilling Trail, which is exactly what the swamp blues is. Your younger blues musicians, like Kenny Neal, Chris Thomas Kane, they say it's a swamp blues. But their fathers said it was the blues.
What is it? What is the distinction?
The distinction is, it's the new modern American way of life. The blues man used to have to work every day. Now, it's an evolved so that if you halfway decent, you can make a living off of doing the blues. Stay in the big hotels, ride in nice cars, and so on. Live in nice homes. But the original juke joints in the blues, you played where you could and when you could.
And like you said, after working all day.
Right, yeah. Right. So you go back to B.B. King again. They said he wrecked the man's tractor. And as far as I know, to the day he died, he's still owed for that tractor. But I do know one thing, they buried him at the end of Old Blues Museum. And he's the only musician that I know that's buried at a museum.
That's really interesting. Where is that?
Indiola, Mississippi.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And is that where he was born?
That's where he was born. It's just so amazing that so far as I know, there's no blues man that I know of or read about that died rich. Everybody else that playing any kind of music, like Elvis, for instance, never wrote a song or did nothing in his life but played other people's music, died a rich man. Like Sammy Davis Jr. in the Rat Pack, same difference. You know what I'm saying?
And it totally fits, though, with the blues, because you're singing the blues.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And you're living it, blues.
Yeah.
See, a lot of people, they come out and sing the blues, like Garth Brooks and people like that, but they don't go home and live the blues. And a lot of people that interview them say, well, Teddy, why you say it like that? I said, because it's a fact. It's known.
They're intrinsically in the history of the roots of blues is pain, is suffering.
Right.
Is clinging to hope.
Right. Well, what blues is, it's life itself. From the day you're born to the day you die. That's the life of a blues man. When you got the blues, you don't outlive it. It outlives you. It brings you in the world and it takes you out.
Now, did you play an instrument?
Yes. I played my first band at 6 years old. My first instrument was a set of sandblock. And I played trumpet, baritone horn, and E-flat French horn. And I played in three or four state championships marching bands.
Wow.
I also sat in with the Baton Rouge Symphony Orchestra for 2 years. And it was just amazing that I didn't realize that I would be in the blues or still doing the same thing I've done my whole life. You know, some people live a lifetime and they never find themselves or nothing that they want to do. The good Lord must have meant for me to do it, you know, because as for now, I don't see no turning around. If you look at this banner on this wall here, say the Big Lou's 6th anniversary. That was in Memphis, Tennessee last year in May. I'll be back up there this year in May. And then the night after that, they have the Blues Award Show in Memphis, Tennessee. And I'll be at that, where they get a B.B. King's Award, and Coco Taylor, and on down the line, of different people that was real famous in the blues.
That's really touching.
Yeah. And every year they do this in Memphis, Tennessee, in the month of May.
Where do they do it in Memphis? At the Blues Museum?
No, they got this big center like the Superdome that they do the show at.
It's big time.
Oh, it's real big time, and people from all over the world be there.
So you're really looking forward to that, huh?
Oh, yeah. I look forward to it, but right as of today, I don't know whether I'm going to have enough money to even go. But I'm still looking forward to it. 90% of all of my traveling, I funded myself. And the last 2 years has been really, really difficult because my wife was a cancer patient. And she's still not back up on her feet like she should be. Plus my nephew, city policeman, that's paralyzed, had a wreck 2 years ago.
Wow.
You know. And it's just one of these things that you have to take it day by day. And that's what the blues is all about. It's a day by day thing. You know, you don't really know exactly what tomorrow will bring, and where some professions, you know what your monthly income will be, what your yearly salary will be, and how much you're going to make when you retire.
But you don't know that.
You don't know none of that with the blues. You might make $100 today, and it might cost you $500 tomorrow to leave this same place. Well, a lot of other musicians that don't do the blues, they got their plane ticket for the next 6 months already paid for. Their problem is just making the gig. And these are the things that the blues man had to cope with each and every day. Just like the band in that plane now. I'm hoping like hell I'll make enough money to pay them tonight, because I'm not charging a cover charge on the dope. Usually the cover charge give you a little incentive to what you might have, and I don't have to put up as much.
Mm-hmm. But the cover charge just doesn't work.
No, it don't work, yeah. Because people agree not to play it. They'd rather go to a festival or a big river center, or Superdome or something, and pay $75 to $100 for a seat, and they got to look at the big screen to see the performer that's performing. Where you can come to Teddy's Juke Joint, and you sit close enough to the person to touch them, and you know that's a real person there. But the cultural things that I found out about life, most people just take it for granted that it's there and it's supposed to be.
Oh, well, you're saying it might not be.
Well, if you think about it, how many universities that you ever heard of where a blues man can go and get a degree in the blues? You name anything else beside the blues, you can get a degree in. Or call it a trade. They don't even call the blues a trade. And that was just one of the things and stuff like that that happened. All right, and thank you for taking the time out to come and interview me.
My pleasure and my
honor.
Next
time you want to come, give me a call and we'll set up a time where we can sit down and talk and kick it around a while.
I love it. I look forward to it. Okay.
All right, thank you, Tom.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com. Our associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Kim Schneider from Michigan, Elaine Masters in San Diego, Julie Henning, Eugene, Oregon, and Steve Cook, contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.
Associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Molly Blaisdell, San Francisco, and Katya Singel, San Luis Obispo, California.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org. And whether you're shopping for new or used items, donating them, or volunteering, you're helping the Society of St. Vincent de Paul help others.